of Andaris sits spin variables, and the mu I will take on two values, plus or minus one, and between neighbors there's an interaction. Where V is greater than zero, and this is the energy of two spins. So the energy is negative when the spins are parallel and positive when the spins are antiparallel. And what you want to show is because of this parallelism that's favored, that the energy is less. So parallelism is favored, that if you just, at low temperatures, when you turn one spin up, then all spins up. But you notice that the model has the reflection symmetry, so energy is favored if the spins are down, all spins down or as well. So the ground state will be either all spins up or all spins down. And as the temperature gets raised, then there's random motion, and you have to make a formalism. And there is a formalism for that, which is statistical mechanics, and that shows you how the spins get random. Now, the mean field approximation is that the energy mean field, if you sum on all the pairs, so that's the energy of an instantaneous configuration, and then you envisage, either you put an external field on, or the internal forces manage to do something, and this is induces an average value of the spin. If the spin has more of a predilection to be up than down, so there's an average value that makes this plus. And the mean field theory is the approximation that the product of the mean of the product is the product of the means. That's called the mean field approximation. And that was introduced in 1900 by Pierre Weiss in Paris to explain his experiments in the way which I explained last time. And we ended last time's lecture by saying that this cannot possibly be right, it's an approximation, but it certainly cannot be right, because the average value of mu I, mu j, which is the thing that interests us, is if j is a spin of I, the average value of mu I, mu j is the average of mu j if mu I is up. Mu I takes on values plus 1 or minus 1. So if mu I is plus 1, then the average value of mu I, mu j will be positive, because mu j will be have more of a predilection than the average. You see, if the external field is zero and you don't have any special dynamic circumstances, then the average of mu I is zero because you have equal amounts of up and down. But if mu j is a neighbor of mu I, then there's more probability that it be up than down j. So mu I, mu j will be positive in that case if mu I is plus one. And this effect is not included in this estimate of energy. I want this with this expectation value. Now, it can be a small effect because the typical values of the energy where very interesting things go on is when a spin feels the field of all the other spins. And if there's a lot of all the other spins surrounding a given spin, that's more energy than one spin feels. And this is would be the effect on mu j felt by just one spin in the neighbor. So this is a small effect. And in fact, when this is developed quantitatively, you find that the more there are spins in the range of the force Vij, then the smaller is this effect. This is called a correlation effect. So why bother with it? The answer is that it opens the way to a very interesting phenomena. For one thing, this quantity is measured. Namely, when you take a beam of light or a beam of neutrons, which is interacting with the spin system, then the beam of particles scatter from the target particles. And the scattering amplitude is proportional to mu I. And the power is proportional, and you sum the sum mu I up with the phase. And the power radiated, the total scattered power, is proportional to the square of that. So the total scattered power is proportional to the average of the product. And this raised great interest in physics in the 1920s. In particular, Einstein became involved in it. That was called the theory of critical opalescence, because when this thing in the critical region, this thing becomes very important. And then you shine a beam of light on the thing and it glows because of the power scattered. And that's a reflection of the behavior of this correlation function. So this is physically important. It's also physically important because as we develop the theory of it, we'll see that much, much physics is encoded in the generalization of this thing when we go to systems with continuous degrees of freedom, that mu I is not just plus one minus one, but say it's a spin psi and then it can goes around a sphere or a circle. And then when that happens, then you have to distinguish between the correlations of and not only the magnitude of SI with SJ, but the directions. If you have an average spin pointed this way, then it's of interest to see what the correlation of the spin in this direction is to the spin in this direction away from it, or this and that, or this and that, if the average value is that way. And that encodes a lot of physics, and in fact, the modern physics of elementary particle physics is precisely the distinction between the correlations this way and that way, if you have an order that way. And then one of them has mass and the other does not have mass. And so understanding these correlations is the key to lots and lots of physics. So we spend a lot of time on it. Now, last time what I did was I showed by mathematical formalism that mu I, mu j, it's 1 if I is equal to j, because mu I squared is plus 1 or minus 1, and the square of plus 1 is 1, the square of minus 1 is 1. So if I is equal to j, it's 1. And if the external field is equal to 0, and the total magnetic moment is equal to 0, which means that I'm not in the ferromagnetic phase, so T is greater than TC, then what we showed last time is that we derived an equation. Beta is 1 over KT. We derived an equation. I'll call this V I J. And this equation can be solved by Fourier transform. So you ask me afterward what a Fourier transform really means, but they all know what Fourier transforms mean. And then this has a trivial solution. This can be solved. Vij, it's taken to be a positive quantity, and the interaction is minus Vij mu I mu j. So the Fourier transform of Vij is positive in angle power. So Vij has V of Q, the Fourier transform is maximal at Q is equal to 0. and for small fuel. You have an expression like this, and as I call this, this quantity, this positive. This quantity is a perfect square, and it, when you it'll go back to the Fourier transform, then you find that phi of r, that meaning of mu, in three dimensions, that g of, that 1 over mu is the length parameter that defines how spins are correlated. Now, what we had shown at the beginning of last hour is what Weiss did. What Weiss did was to do what I said, namely assume that the energy, instead of being the average of the product of the spins, is the product of the average, make an estimate of the entropy, and then he showed that he got self-consistent equations, and the self-consistent equations, I have to go over this for the guests, the self-consistent equations were such that for t greater than tc, and the external field was equal to zero. When you went to the limit that when the external field went to zero, that the average value of the magnetization went to zero, when T was greater than TC. Where TC, the thermal energy, is precisely this quantity V zero. And when T was less than V tilde zero, then when H exterior went to zero, there was a non-trivial solution where you were left with the magnetic moment, the average value of mu I, not equal to zero. And when H exterior went to zero, therefore, the system bore within itself, as H exterior went to zero, the direction of H exterior, but not its value, and not its absolute value. It was memory conserving as far as direction, but not as far as magnitude. And you were left, so you have a system, you put a magnetic field on, you take the field to zero, and then you're left with a magnetic moment pointed in the direction where Hx was, even though Hx isn't. And so it remembers the direction. And then if you flip the sign of Hx, so then the sign flips all the way up and equals to the other way. And that's called spontaneous breakdown of symmetry. It's this memory. If the temperature is low enough. Okay. So this result then shows that the way you approach spontaneous broken symmetry as the temperature gets lower is that the correlation function, that the correlation function diverges, that the mass goes to zero, precisely when the temperature is the critical temperature of Weiss. And then you find that G at T is equal to TC and Q is equal to zero, and that is equal to G at Q in the limit that Q goes to zero is proportional to the average value of mu I mu j summed on j without any weight factor. That's what the zero means. And this means that this is 1 over n times the average value of mu I mu j over all I and j, because this thing is a function only of Ri minus Rj, so I take this as n terms, and this as n squared terms, but of those n squared terms, n are equal, I take one out. And so this quantity, g of q, as q goes to zero, is proportional to the average square of the magnetic moment.
Okay. Thanks, Robert, obviously.
So you, now you know what spontaneous growth and symmetry is.
Well, yes, it's interesting, but obviously I can't follow your argument to know what it's.
Of course you can't, but. You asked.
But the concept is fascinating, though, but I won't disturb you any longer, but we'll be in touch, though.
Okay. Now we can become professional again. And what I wanted to, since I am here, I wanted to give a little more feeling for this equation before going a little more into formalism. Namely, if you solve this equation iteratively, it's sum on paths that go from 1 to n. Where the weight of each link is beta b. Okay, just take near neighbors. So if I solve this iteratively in the second order, for example, I get Vik, Vkj. In the third order, Vik, Vkl, Vlm, etc., the finishing up at the final point n. So the approximation is that the correlation function is physically due to the fact that a given spin, say the first spin, polarizes its neighbors, which in turn polarizes its neighbors, which in turn polarizes its neighbors, and finally you reach the end. And so it's not surprising that under random circumstances when t is greater than tc, that the correlation function should drop off exponentially, because when you go from there to there, you induce a little bit of spin. When you go from there, you induce a little bit of spin, which is proportional to this little bit. So this is a little bit squared, and this is a little bit cubed, and so forth all along the line. So it's not surprising that when you sum all the little bits to the n over n factorial, you're going to get that connection. So that's the physical origin of the drop off of the exponential, the exponential drop off the correlation with the function, which has been displayed mathematically in the way I've done. Now I generalize it a little bit, and then we're going to go into a fundamental exact theorem. Being reduced to nothing.
There's a box right on the table.
Yellow box.
Pretty yellow box.
Suppose H exterior is not equal to zero, and or T is less than TC, so that mu I on the average is not equal to zero. And I'm going to introduce the source function. H is the source field. I introduced my source field last time, didn't I? Source field on I, that is an infinitesimal coupling of HI on UI. I introduce a little coupling like that with a minus. Then in the field. On I is H external plus V I J into J plus H I. And I leave you for the exercise if you calculate Z, which is the trace of E to the minus V to the Hamiltonian, where the Hamiltonian is 1/2 V I J. The 1/2 not to overcount, minus H external, so H. I'll leave you the exercise then, but to begin with this Hamiltonian formally, and let's just formally take the derivative, E log Z, DHI, which made it. H external. And if you put H I equal to 0, that is how you get mu I, the average value of mu I. And if T is greater than TC and H external goes to 0 calculation, that thing will be 0. How much can you see here? Yeah. That's accessible?
Raised it. I think you raised it. It's up.
And it's equal to mu I mu j. But if not, you always have to remember that GIG has a sense of a fluctuation. And now I want to be a little formal. Well, not yet. I'll still be a little informal. And I'll do a modified molecular field theory. And then after that, I'll go formal. A modified molecular field theory. And then mu I is the charge of beta x carry plus v I j plus h I x carry. And then v. So now I take the derivative of this. The derivative of the tangent is 1 minus tan squared. I'll call this n. So M is the average value of U of mu I. So the derivative of this is 1 minus the tan squared. So that's 1 minus m squared times the derivative of the argument. H exterior is equal to 0. H exterior and T fixed. So it's 1 minus m squared. There's the explicit derivative delta I j. Plus the derivative of k runs, so for the running in the chair, k mu I k d g k j times, that's it. And so now when you solve that, I hope I haven't made a mistake. Because yesterday when I did it, I was confusing myself and I made some mistakes. But I think I'm not making any mistakes today. And when you make these silly mistakes, it can cost you an hour. And it did cost you an hour. You get all the factors right. The solution is really quite elegant in this approximation. G of Q is 1 minus the average of the magnetization square. And then lo and behold, look what happens. But the first time I saw this in my life, I was in my mid-20s, and I just fell on my nose. I didn't expect anything. And then I jumped out of my skin, because the formalism is so beautiful, even in this approximation, because when T is greater than TC, I'm not in the ferromagnetic phase, M is equal to zero, the correlation function is long range, 1 minus beta V, V tilde Q. If Q is equal to 0, that gives you 1 minus beta V of 0 is the inverse range. And when beta is equal to beta C, the KTC is equal to V0, that's the critical point, the range becomes infinite. And then I'm asked to increase the temperature. I'm asked to decrease the temperature. I'm asked to increase beta. I have something here which is positive. It's a fluctuation. When Q is equal to zero, this quantity is proportional to delta mu squared squared. So it's something which is intrinsically positive. When I didn't have this effect, I had this thing being positive down to the critical temperature. I take beta a little higher, and 1 minus beta V tilde of 0 becomes negative and I'm killed. But what does the system do? It does something very beautiful. It magnetizes to prevent a catastrophe. And when the beta becomes higher, when the temperature becomes lower than V0, the factor which was unity at the critical temperature now is attenuated by a factor 1 minus m squared, which is less than 1, because m has a domain of variation between 0 and 1. So the system very beautifully and very cooperatively orders itself to avoid the catastrophe, and the meaning of the equations of the correlation function is no longer what is the average value of mu j given mu I? But it's the average value of mu j given mu I less than the average of mu squared. Even the meaning of the quantity which we're calculating is changing. It comes from a pure correlation to really something in the sense of a mixture of a correlation and a fluctuation. And it attenuates, the catastrophe attenuates in this beautiful way. Now, in this particular example, you see very easily, let's see, V of Q is maximal at Q is equal to zero. So sense, common sense requires that 1 minus beta V zero, 1 minus M squared, must be greater than zero in order when t becomes less than, and then the tc. The system magnetizes to have this. So why is this thing greater than zero? Where is there in the formalism? Well, I use this modified mean field theory. So look at the mean field theory. In the mean field theory, 1 is equal to times beta mv0 m. I can put the h external equal to 0 for the moment. So that's the mean field theory. Did I get that? No, m is equal to that. Yes, so I better put in little h. And you see that the MDH equals 1 minus half square. V to V zero. And this is from the Weiss theory, the MDH. So chi, the susceptibility, the MDH, is precisely equal to 1 over 1 minus V to V zero. The creature that appears here, which I identified with the mass squared, the rate of flow off, is the inverse susceptibility. But that saves the day, it makes the correlations finite. And it is positive, because if you recall, I keep on losing essential equipment. Because if you recall, when we examine the solution of the Weiss equation, when we looked at the magnetic moment as a function of H, then as h went to zero and t was greater than tc, we had a curve like this where the slope, t and dh, was positive. As beta v zero approached unity, that slope increased. When beta v zero was equal to 1, you have this infinite slope. And all of these slopes are greater than or equal to zero. And when beta V zero is greater than 1, when we're below the critical point, the curve stops there. And this is the spontaneous magnetization. But once more, in the whole physical domain, every slope, the MDH, is always greater than zero. Marvelous. The system accommodates itself so that a would-be catastrophe is avoided by the, because the system magnetizes itself self-consistently in order to give a sensible theory and to keep the fluctuations positive. That's cute, huh? Now, the wonderful thing is that these results are not only cute, but that they are exact. They are thermodynamically exact. So, until now, we're in the context of an approximation, motivating things, and showing that things can be really beautiful. And now we will see that things are, honest to God, really beautiful. That this is really what happens, not in an approximate way, but quite rigorously. For this, I want to discuss, so, the approximate mean field theory techniques for the moment, I'm letting go. And I want to go a little bit into thermodynamics, and then we make contact. So I want to introduce what in the literature is called effective potential. And now when you read the books, they're all out of step with Jim. I'm Jim, and my effective potential is based on Helmholtz. And all the other guys are Gibbs. So this tends to a lot of confusion. And some time ago when I gave this course, I was 3 days in conversation on the phone, mostly on and off, with François Anglais, to prove to him that I was right. Because he said I was only right because it's molecular field theory. But what I'm going to say is absolutely rigorous, and I think is the deepest way to look at it. What we did was we examined the Z layer by layer, M by M. And Zm has a stationarity point, a maximum, about a configuration of magnetization M stop. M for the Ising model, if T is greater than Tc, there is one stationarity point. If T is less than Tc, and we have H external equal to zero, there are 2 points of stationarity corresponding to M star and minus M star. So, and when you make an expansion of M minus M star, the deviations of a order 1 over n compared to order 1. The error in estimating log z by its stationarity magnetization is negligible for macroscopic systems. Now, leave yourself a paper go back to your statistical mechanics courses and take the grand partition function and go from the grand partition function where n is a fluctuating quantity to the petit partition function where you project from the grand partition function onto a fixed value of n. Prove that the fluctuations about the fixed value of n in the grand partition function of order 1 over square root of n compared to what's been retained, and that you can work with either the grand partition function or the petit partition function and get the correct physics. Have you all had statistical mechanics courses where this has been shown? If not, I'm in room 363 and we can do it together. It's something that must be known, and it's something that should be borne in mind in this particular instance, because there is a rewrite of this model called the lattice gauge theory, called spin lattice theory, In any case, instead of using mu I, write mu I is 1 plus epsilon I over 2. So when mu I is 1, epsilon I is 1, and when mu I is minus 1, when mu I is 1, epsilon I is 1. When mu I is minus 1, epsilon I is 0. Make the interpretation that I have sites. And when a site is occupied, epsilon I is 1. So epsilon is the density at site I. And when the site is empty, the density is 0. There's nothing there. So mu I is interpreted as a particle is there or is not there. The total density, the total number of particles, is the sum on epsilon I. The sum on epsilon I is proportional to the sum of mu I. The sum of mu I is equal to the magnetization. The sum on epsilon I is the sum on the number of particles present. So the transfer of the from the grand partition function, when you sum on all configurations of mu I, is like the sum on all epsilon I's. But if you go to the petit partition function, by projecting on fixed magnetization, then you fix the average value of n. So for those who have not firmly under control the fluctuations that you encounter in statistical mechanics of macroscopic systems, it's rather important to think in terms of these examples. Is it okay? And for those who have trouble, say we can work it out on the blackboard. Because if every little point I'm going to do will never get done with anything interesting. So this guy has a stationarity point at n is equal to n0, and when you neglect log n over n, that's called the thermodynamic limit, and from now on we're going to work in the thermodynamic limit. And we can use this approximation. So for d log z, dm is a point of stationarity of this piece of the Helmholtz free energy holding H exterior fixed. And throughout this analysis, the temperature is fixed. But I don't mess around. I don't mess around by, for the moment, letting I fix H exterior. That's the whole partition function. And I say that the whole partition function in the presence of a magnetic field has a stationary point. M is equal to M0. M is equal to M star. Well, here in my notes, I wrote it up in field theory formalism. But what I'm doing is very much related to the Schwinger-Martin formalism of field theory, for those who know field theory. Now, and these walk around as much as glasses. Large X is a function of H because M star is adjusted at H fixed, so large X is a function of H. And what notation did I use for this is the secret to the physics. Everything I do is contingent upon the linearity of the coupling of the magnetic moment to the external field. If I had a coupling to the external field, it would go like the square of the external field, and then you wouldn't have thermodynamics as we understand it, as you read the books, all books are probably rewritten. Thermodynamics is a study in great measure of linear response. Now, because of that, at the critical point, I can drag this term of the Hamiltonian out of the sum M on all the configurations. I only have the configurations at fixed M, and throughout my sum on that sum N, M is fixed, so I just drag it out. And by the way, this M star is equal to the average value of M, because when I look at log Z as a function of M for certain H, it's a zero almost everywhere, but it goes up and then it comes down. So all the spin configurations are crowded about M is equal to M star. So M star is clearly equal to the average value of M. And you can make a mathematical proof of that. But there's no need, it's good common sense also. So, this is my effective potential. And this is other people. So when you're reading you will find this. Where is that? It's been a restricted trace. Could you keep the M fixed? For V to the minus 3. It's interaction. So is that tilde is that part of Z which only involves interactions. And then, for example, in Hamon's book on private field theory, there is tremendous emphasis on maybe 100 pages to working with what are called one particle reducible graphs. And here, it's isolated in this way. Through the, well, this is mine. Excuse me, I got. This is the others. The sum of these two is me. The others work with this. But what is this? This is log Z minus M star. Okay. And that's what's called the Gibbs potential. That's a function of M. And the variational principles can be announced either in terms of G or in terms of F, either mine or theirs, this is theirs, them, this is me, and you can do physics in either one or the other. And they're equivalent in physics, and they're very important to understand the correlation functions and the mass of the correlation. First, I'll work in terms of the Helmholtz potential.
Is your distinct is this distinction between this your log Z and the other's log Z? You said that your log Z is referred to as the one particle irreducible graphs.
No, my log Z. No, I didn't say that. My log Z is this particle.
Yeah.
It can be decomposed into log Z tilde and the external interaction. And that's the one particle reducible, not mine. This is the Green's function generating function. This is the one particle reducible Green's function generating function when you try to match them up in field theory. Okay, now we have the definitions.
Before you go on, you said you wanted to stop for like 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, well now let me finish these sentences.
Yes.
So thanks for looking after my health. Needs it. Onto this own field theoretic notation. Did I write it out separately? I don't want to change my notation. Oh. What I want, I know that I'm going to put beta is equal to 1 because it's fixed everywhere on this. And now, the logs there is equal to logs there in the thermodynamic limit of m star of h, where m star is equal to the other. So, I'm going to come off the minimum a little bit and take the derivative of log z with respect to n. And then do this, and if I'm really interested in getting the average value of n, then afterwards I put m is equal to m star and I use a variational principle and I get this is equal to 0. But that's not what I want to do. And what I want to do, I hope I get it right, is I want to take a second derivative. I hope I'm going to get it right. Maybe it's a good time to stop and let me look at the notes. It's a tricky thing, and it's very important.